life, promise, and Torah. Is today's title. So I may sound like a broken record. Each week when I begin, as we continue our summer of life, and thus relating aspects of Torah to life, it may only seem that way because there are just so many aspects of life that are revealed in Torah, and thus are therefore relatable to life, and thus applicable to our lives today. For any of you who have ever embraced in the past, well, the law has been done away with, well, the Old Testament's been done away with, we no longer need it for anything. You may have greatly deprived yourself in the past, but that's the past. Yet there are still believers today who focus not on the foundation of their faith, but on the fulfillment of their faith. But you cannot get to the fulfillment unless you have a foundation to start from. So for those of you who are not old enough to know what the idiom of a broken record means, a broken record is a pressed piece of vinyl comprising one long continuous groove, and when etched, captures a recorded sound. A record became broken when the groove is broken, and thus, as it rotates on a turntable, repeats over and over. So I am not broken, I am not repeating myself, but thus if it sounds like that, it isn't because that I am broken, but because this one aspect I have focused on this entire summer is extremely comprehensive. Yet another dynamic of Torah is that of promise. Interestingly, the word used most frequently in the Tanakh and translated as promise is not translated as promise, that is, in the present tense, but in the past tense. Devar, the Hebrew word, which I'll explain in a minute, is spoken of in the past tense in Torah, not the present tense in I will make a promise, but past. Exodus 12:25, when you come to the land which Adonai will give you, as he has promised, Devar, you are to observe this ceremony, and this is in relation to Passover, thus conveying a promise that had been made and is alluded to in the future. Here Adonai is reiterating a promise of land, first conveyed to Abraham and thus reaffirmed here as a promise having already been made in the past. The Hebrew word devar, or dabar, depending on if it's using a bet or a vet, offers one of those extensive lists conveying a complex word with multiple dynamics, and I'm not going to go through all of it, but you'll see it in the notes. Here it's translated as promised, past tense, meaning it has already occurred. Devar is typically translated as word. Thus, word conveys promise. Interestingly, when someone gives their word, they are in essence giving their promise. I don't believe that's a coincidence in Hebrew or as it relates or as we understand it in English. Devar can mean promise and devar is word. Do the math. 1 + 1 = 1. When Adonai gives his word, he will fulfill it. He will honor it and he will do it. Numbers 23:19, God is not a human who lies or a mortal who changes his mind. When he says something, he will do it. When he makes a promise, he will fulfill it. Promise in English can be either a verb or a noun. A verb in that it is the action whereby one assures someone that one will definitely do something, give or arrange something, undertake or declare that something will happen. In other words, they're making a promise, something that will occur in the future. As a noun, it can be viewed in two ways, the quality or potential. That person shows promise. The second is more what we're focusing on, a declaration or assurance that one will do a particular thing or that a particular thing will happen. Adonai made a declaration to Abraham when he told him to leave his home. He said in Genesis 12:1, "Now Adonai said to Abram, get yourself out of your country, away from your kinsmen and away from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you are to be a blessing. I will bless you. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse anyone who curses you. And by you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." Is this not a tall order of promises that God is making to one individual simply by saying, go, leave? But what's God doing? He's in essence making a promise that in essence will be concealed or contained within a covenant. Adonai made a promise to Noah. In Genesis chapter 8, starting in verse 20, Noah built an altar to Adonai. Then he took from every clean animal and every clean bird, and he offered burnt offerings on the altar. Adonai smelled the sweet aroma, and Adonai said in his heart, "I will never again curse the ground because of humankind. Since the imaginings of a person's heart are evil from his youth, nor will I ever again destroy all living things as I have done. So long as the earth exists, sowing time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, the day and night will not cease." To this day, Adonai has kept his promise that he made to Noah. And yet Adonai's promises don't end with the person. He is making them with the promise Adonai made to Abraham extended to his descendants. Thus, the promise is intended to continue. This is true with Noah and affirms what I had just conveyed, that to this day, Adonai has kept his promises. In Genesis 9, 8, God spoke to Noah and his sons and said, "As for me, I am herewith establishing my covenant with you, with your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the livestock, and every wild animal with you, all going out of the ark, every animal on earth. I will establish my covenant with you that never again will all living beings be destroyed by the waters of a flood, and there will never again be a flood to destroy the earth." There has been flooding, but there hasn't been one all-inclusive flood. And thus with Abraham, in Genesis 12:7, Adonai appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." So he built an altar there to Adonai who had appeared to him. So the promises that God made to Abram are for his descendants as well. Adonai conveys to Abraham and refers to your descendants 12 times when he speaks to Abraham, conveying the promise that is the covenant is not just made with him, but also with his descendants. We're talking Yitzhak and Yaakov. We're talking the 12 tribes. We're talking the descendants of Abraham, basically, through the seed of Sarah, obviously. That is, they are not time sensitive. Thus, you cannot say that because a promise made by Adonai hasn't happened yet, that doesn't mean it won't happen. God does not need to function within the confines of time. The nation would go 400 plus years before the promise Adonai made to Abraham and his descendants would come to fruition, that being taking possession of the land. And let me share with you another promise that was made that would be revealed to the nation some 1,300 years after it was first promised. What occurred during these 1,300 years? The descendants of Abraham would take possession of the land, live in the land, desire a king to rule over them. That would ultimately lead to a division of the nation into two, followed by expulsion from the land for the divided kingdom. The nation would be restored to their land. Yet just as occurred with expulsion from the land, they would fall under the authority of other nations and empires. Consider that a synopsis of 1,300 years worth of history. If you want footnotes, I would say go from Exodus 12. Actually, you can do Deuteronomy 40 or Deuteronomy 30, Numbers 33 onwards, which gives the history of everything of where they were to the end of Ezra. Or Nehemiah, excuse me. Because the prophets are foretold within the middle of that. Yet prior to all of this occurring, Adonai spoke to Moses these words. Adonai will raise up for you a prophet like me from among yourselves. From your own kinsmen you are to pay attention to him. Just as when you were assembled at Horeb and requested Adonai your God, don't let me hear the voice of Adonai my God anymore, or let me see this great fire ever again. If I do, I will die. On that occasion, Adonai said to me, they are right in what they are saying. And then verse 18, Adonai conveys to Moses, I will raise up for them a prophet like you, like Moses, from among their kinsmen. I will put my words in his mouth, and they will tell them everything I order him. Whoever doesn't listen to my words, which he will speak in my name, will have to account for himself to me. This is the promise of the prophet, who will be like Moses, whereby he was given the words of Adonai to speak to the people. Moses was a prophet himself. God spoke directly to him, not in visions and dreams, but directly. Many prophets would be anointed by Adonai to speak his words to the people. From Isaiah to Nathan, Jeremiah to Elisha, many would speak in the authority that had been granted them by Adonai. Yet there would be one who would be different from all the prophets. We witness this explanation as recorded in Yochanan's gospel. We read of a voice in the wilderness crying out, that of Yochanan the immerser, where in John chapter 1, starting in verse 19, here is Yochanan's testimony. When the Judeans sent Kohanim and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, who are you? He was very straightforward and stated clearly, I am not the Messiah, if you were thinking that. If you were thinking that were my words. Verse 21. Then who are you, they asked. Are you Eliyahu? Are you Elijah? No, I am not, he said. Are you the prophet, the one we're expecting? No, he replied. So they said to him, who are you? So that we can give an answer to the people who sent us. What do you have to say about yourself? He answered in the words of Isaiah the prophet, I am the voice of someone crying out, in the desert, make the way of Adonai straight. Some of those who have been sent were Pharisees. They asked him, if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet, then why are you immersing people? To them, Yochanan replied, I am immersing people in water, but among you is standing someone whom you don't know. He is the one coming after me. I'm not good enough even to untie his sandals. All this took place at Bethany, east of the Jordan, where Yochanan was immersing. The people were wondering who Yochanan was. He was preaching the message of the prophets of Israel. Repent and return. Thus the people were wondering if he was Elijah, who was promised to come before the Lord in Malachi. Look, I will send to you Eliyahu the prophet before the coming and great and terrible day of Adonai. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Otherwise, I will come and strike the land with complete destruction. There's a promise of Elijah coming. They're wondering, could this be Elijah coming? Because he was caught up, remember. Thus, the message of Yochanan was conveying was that of Elijah, what he would do. Likewise, the aspect of the prophet, bearing no name, and thus the inquiry of the people. For the prophet would be like Moses. This expectation would not end with Yochanan, for the people were still anticipating the prophet. For if Yochanan wasn't him, then he was still to come. Later in Yochanan's account, not the immerser, but John's gospel, we read of Yeshua at Lake Kinneret, where he is followed by large crowds of people, for he has already caused a stir amongst the people. What would occur next would cause the people to speculate in the same manner they did with Yochanan the immerser. It would not be what Yeshua said, but what he did. Many had gathered, and there was concern for feeding them. John 6:4. Now the Judean festival of Passover was coming up. So when Yeshua looked up and saw that a large crowd was approaching, he said, Philip, where will we be able to buy bread so that these people can eat? For which Philip would reply, half a year's wages wouldn't buy enough bread for them. Each one would get only one bite. And thus Andrew would convey that there was a boy with some bread and fish. Yet it wouldn't be enough to feed everyone. Upon hearing this, Yeshua spoke, have the people sit down. There was a lot of grass there, so they sat down. The number of men was about 5,000. Men only. We're not being misogynist here. There were 5,000 men. Then Yeshua took the loaves of bread, and after making a bracha, a blessing, gave to all who were sitting there, and likewise with the fish, as much as they wanted. He didn't give sparingly, he gave out of his abundance. They could eat as much as they wanted to. After they had eaten their fill, he told the Talmidim, gather the leftover pieces so that nothing gets wasted. They gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces that the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the miracle that he had performed, they said, this has to be the prophet who is supposed to come into the world. The people witnessed a miracle that offered only one possibility, the prophet. Thus the people would further seek Yeshua, as we continue in John chapter 6 and verse 24. Accordingly, when the crowd saw that neither Yeshua nor his Talmidim were there, they themselves boarded the boats and made for Capernaum in search of Yeshua. When they found him on the other side of the lake and asked, Rabbi, when did you get here? Yeshua had been revealed and is going through the Galilee and is stirring the people through his words and actions. Yeshua had just fed 5,000 men, plus women and children, to where when those that are seeking him would find him again. Yes, indeed, he says, I tell you, you're not looking for me because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the bread and had all you wanted. For the people hungered for another sign that they would believe. Yeshua answered, here's what the work of God is, to trust in the one he sent. Then he said, what miracle will you do for us, the people asked, so that we may see it and trust you? What work can you perform? He had just fed 5,000 plus. And they're asking for another. Show us more. Our fathers ate manna in the desert. As it says in the Tanakh, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Yeshua said to them, yes, indeed, I tell you, it wasn't Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father in giving you the genuine bread from heaven. For God's bread is the one who comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world. They said to him, sir, give us this bread from now on, they asked, or demanded, actually. Yeshua answered, I am the bread which is life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever trusts in me will never go thirsty. I told you that you have seen, but still don't trust. The people's desire and anticipation grew even more, whereby we come to the time of Sukkot, and specifically the last day of Sukkot, Hoshana Rabbah, which we're going to come to next month. And at this time, Yeshua was in the midst of another powerful sermon at the temple, whereby he conveys this. On the last day of Sukkot, Hoshana Rabbah, Yeshua stood and cried out, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. Whoever puts his trust in me, as the scripture says, rivers of living water will flow from his inmost being. Now he said this about the Spirit, whom those who trusted in him were to receive later. The Spirit had not yet been given because Yeshua had not yet been glorified. So he's talking about this living water, whereby in hearing this, the people said, surely this man is the prophet. Others said, this is the Messiah. But others said, how can the Messiah come from the Galilee? Doesn't the Tanakh say that Messiah is from the seed of David and comes from Bethlehem, the village where David lived? So even after all this, not everybody was on the same page. I want you to pay attention to this specifically. It is Yeshua's relationship to the bread of life and the living water that are both related to Moses, that the people speculated as to the prophet. We have the living water where he made the bitter water sweet. We have the living water that came out of the rock. We have the manna that came down from heaven. Remember, I will bring a prophet like Moses. These two aspects connect those dots. Thus, when we are talking promises made by Adonai, we are not to use human traits and characteristics to rationalize them or develop our own expectations. For Adonai has established an order by which the promises he has made will come to fruition. Consider Kepha, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. Moreover, dear friends, he says, do not ignore this. With the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some people think of slowness. On the contrary, he is patient with you. For it is not his purpose that anyone should be destroyed, but that everyone should turn from his sins. Galatians chapter 4, starting in verse 3. So it is with us. When we were children, we were slaves to the elemental spirits of the universe. But when the appointed time arrived, God sent forth his son. He was born from a woman, born into a culture in which legalistic perversion of the Torah was the norm, so that he might redeem those in subjection to this legalism and thus enable us to be made God's sons. Not convinced yet? Here's a third witness. Acts 1. When they were all together, they asked him, Lord, are you at this time going to restore self-rule to Israel? Yeshua's answer, you don't need to know the dates or the times. The Father has kept them under his own authority. Yeshua says, if you trust in God, trust also in me, in John 14. Thus, the words that Yeshua is giving, in essence, God is conveying. You are continuing to see Adonai's promises realized, even today. We are in the midst of his preparation for the return of Messiah. He first came when the nation was under the authority of the Goyim, and religious authority had perverted the words and the ways of God. Thus today we are seeing a perversion of his word in the land, whereby his acceptance is seen as heresy. Though the nation is under their own sovereignty, there will come a time when the nations will once again come against Israel, to where this will be one aspect that will prompt his return. Thus Adonai remains faithful to his promises and to the people he has made the promises to. For this very faithfulness should be further reassurance to anyone who has placed their trust in Yeshua regardless of the troubles caused by or amplified by the adversary. For if Adonai has kept his promises to Israel, then he will keep his promises to you as well. For if you have come to accept Yeshua, you have come to accept the promises he has made to the Jew first, but equally to the nations. Romans 1:16 and 17. For I am not ashamed of the good news, since it is God's powerful means of bringing salvation to everyone who keeps on trusting. There is not a period here, there is a comma here. To the Jew especially, but equally to the Gentile. For in it is revealed how God makes people righteous in his sight. And from beginning to end, it is through trust, as the Tanakh puts it. But the person who is righteous will live his life by trust. There'll be more on that in the weeks to come, by the way. But be careful how you apply Adonai's promises, for many do so in error, taking a verse out of its context and applying it to them as if Adonai had spoken it to them. Case in point, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know what plans I have in mind for you, says Adonai. Plans for well-being, not for bad, so that you can have hope and a future. Typically quoted independent of any context, this verse is applied promises as if it has been prophetically uttered within that situation. Yet what is the actual context? What is the situation of verse 11? Verse 10. For here is what Adonai says. After Babel's 70 years are over, I will remember you and fulfill my good promise to you by bringing you back to this place. For I know what plans I have in mind for you, says Adonai. Plans for well-being, not for bad things, so that you can have hope and a future. So it is associated with Israel and the promises Adonai has made to the nation, ultimately for his purpose. Scripture is not a Ouija board, whereby whatever you ask of it, it will respond to you. We must understand the promises of Adonai in the context of how he gave them, and thus understand how those promises apply to us, Jew and Gentile. Thus, don't take lightly the promises of Adonai, for he does not lie. He does not change his mind, and when he gives his word, Devar, he does it. He keeps his promises, Devar, Devar. His word is his bond, his word is his promise. So keep these things in mind, because God has good things for us as a congregation. He has good things for you as an individual within the body of Messiah. Because there are promises still to come that have not yet been fulfilled or realized, that you will experience likely in your lifetime if you have not experienced some already. So know the richness of Torah, the promises revealed by God long ago are alive today because he did not make them just with the individual. He made them with the descendants. And for this, we are waiting patiently, eagerly, maybe in some cases anxiously, for the return of Messiah, because it had been promised. For we have seen the prophet. We have heard or read the words of the prophet. And we have believed the prophet that was promised. Someone like Moses. Someone who brought forth the bread of life and living water, just as Moses did. So be encouraged that he's not done yet, because there are still promises waiting for him to fulfill. So if everybody will please rise.